Welcome to the Goldmine Podcast. This is a show where I teach you everything I know about creating your life with purpose, health, and soul. And I believe that we do that through holistic self-expression. If you're ready to finally step into your own personal power and create the life you want, you've come to the right place. Get ready to dive into personal development through science, spirituality, leading-edge health findings, and learning through ancient and modern wisdom. And other people just like you. Because what I hope you'll find is that it's about us all. Thank you for joining me on my journey, and I'm leaving you with an invite to stay curious.
I'm really excited to introduce you guys to Brian Stacey. We actually met at an event in New York in April that we both spoke at, and he was standing in the back, and I decided to go have a conversation with him because this event that we were at was a purely women's event, and the host, my coach Kiara, brought in a men's panel to speak to these entrepreneurial women who are changing their lives, and so it was really interesting. So I knew that I had to go at least grab one of them and have a conversation. And Brian and I ended up talking, and as you'll hear a little bit of his story, the conversation got deep really quick. And so this whole podcast is really awesome because it goes from very concrete conversations to sort of deep and spiritual conversations and everything in between. It was a lot of fun for me. And you'll hear throughout the conversation that we talk a lot about masculinity, and that's something that I just want to like put out here in the beginning, that it's a theme that we're going to be talking about throughout this. And for men and for women, it was really powerful for me and for the other 80 women at the event to see men who are single, men who are in relationship, men who have had the trauma, actually stepping in and doing the inner work to grow themselves and to create their life and to create the relationships that they know that they and we as women deserve. And so this conversation can go so much more in depth, and I plan to at least have him or somebody else on where we can go in depth in that conversation of relationship. We don't cover it too much on here, but I just want this to be a reminder that if you're a woman, there are men out here doing this work, and there are ways to invite your significant other into doing this work that work and are effective rather than trying to like yell at them into doing the work. And for men, there are men out here who are diving into feeling more powerful. There are men out here who can navigate you through the inner work without you feeling like you're losing your masculinity. And it's so incredible. And it's so inspiring. And this conversation gets to be had with men. And men are now rising up to that standard. And so if you're not rising up to that standard, we'll get ready to have some competition, because there are a lot of men rising up to the standard of doing this inner work and learning how to consciously and responsibly create and communicate in their lives. And it's incredible. So I had to just stick this in here. As I was describing Brian, because of this whole men's panel that we saw at the event was amazing, and I can't wait to speak to each and every one of them. Yes, so Brian, what Brian does is he explores the elements that create massive change. So during his 13 years at Accenture, he actually started some change initiatives with Fortune 100 companies in regulated industries like law enforcement, finance, healthcare. This is really interesting because there, doing all that, he uncovered the beliefs, needs, fears, and constraints that drive behavior and the tools to change them. So Brian's story is very individualized because he was actually diagnosed with testicular cancer and chlamydia on the same day back in 2011. He set out to change sexual health culture, and he launched Beam, which is the world's first sexual health app on your phone to facilitate STI testing and partner discussions. Looking to further drive this cultural shift, Brian co-founded Man Amongst Men, which is another podcast I suggest you try and listen to. And it's actually a monthly live event that they do in New York City where he and his partner leads workshops to identify how men's patterns and purpose can create the environments which they and others thrive in. Currently, he does work with clients, and there he works on identifying and aligning personal and organizational visions. And so Brian, just having this short conversation with him, he has brought himself into a completely different personality, and he continues to do so as he is creating his life. And so I'm really excited to introduce you guys and bring you guys in and just to listen to this awesome conversation for men and for women. It's incredible for both. So let me know what you think. You can reach out to me on social media if you have any questions. His name is Brian Stacey, and I'll put his information in the show notes. If you're in New York, definitely check him out. And yes, welcome back to the podcast. Welcome back to the podcast, guys. I'm here with Brian, as you just heard all about, and we're going to just dive right in. We had been talking about 10 minutes before we even started the recording, so I'm really excited what's going to come in. I do, however, Brian, have a start-off question for you.
Oh, bring it on. I feel like we're already warmed up here.
Yeah. To the people listening here, or to anybody, just the collective, around masculinity and sexual health and all of the things that you love, if you could insert one piece of knowledge into all of their minds, what would it be?
It feels so strange to say, you know, masculinity and sexual health, all those things that you love, Brian, like all that masculinity and sexual health stuff. I never would have thought that would have been on a podcast talking about masculinity and sexual health. And like, these are things that I do and that I talk about. And
so obviously too, you're not trying to hide it.
Yes, exactly. Right. It's not something that was on that checklist in high school. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? There wasn't the masculinity and sexual health talker guy. One thing, wow, we're going to really start out with this hardcore. So if there is one thing that, and I do a lot of men's work, honestly, I think this is especially pertains to guys and absolutely women as well. But I went through a long period of my life, and we'll get into some of the stories, where I just quite simply didn't listen to anything that my body, that my internal feelings were telling me. And that got me into all kinds of trouble. And so my history over the past 3 or 4 years has been starting to tune into that, into what is my body saying, into what is my intuition saying, and actually allowing myself to believe that and make decisions based on it. So if there's one simple thing that I have for your entire audience, is just listen. Listen to yourself, listen to your body, and don't try to override it with all the analytical processing that we can do.
I absolutely love that. It leads into a lot of the things I'm passionate about, no surprise. May I add one thing to that?
Please.
So I think, we talk about listening to our body all the time. Like if you're in personal development to any extreme, like you're going to hear that. And I think the conversation gets to shift around, like it is listening, but we're listening to our body. Like when I say listen, I mean feel. Right. Mm. And so learning how to feel what our body's telling us, because our body speaks a different language than our brain. If, you know, our brain, we listen to our brain. That's the conversation we're having in our head. Like I'm having a conversation with myself right now as I'm speaking to you. I can actually listen to the words that I'm saying to myself if I try hard enough and learn how to. But when it comes down to the body, it's about feeling. Don't you agree?
Yeah. Feeling is the word. And as I mentioned, I do a lot of men's work. So we try to stay away from the word, at least in the beginning of feeling. However, that is exactly what we're talking about.
Interesting that you said that. Cause when I thought that I wanted to say that, I thought about the feminine, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But feeling sensations, yeah, it's a totally different ball game. So cool. I love that.
I like to call them data points. Hey, these are just simply data points that help us make decisions. And if you only want half the data to make a decision, then forget your feelings. Like go with your head.
You're totally right. And I call it feedback.
It's feedback. Great. Yes.
Total feedback. Yeah. Yes. Awesome. So I was talking to my partner about you and what you guys do, and I was asking him if he had any questions to ask, what would they be? And so we have a couple of down here. He said, Why do we think masculinity is stored in our dicks?
Okay. Eddie, that was the period, end of question or question mark?
Well, it says, why do we think our masculinity is stored there? But we were talking about like our physical nature.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, what says I'm a guy more than the one physical attribute that really sets us apart? Mm-hmm. That it's also the physical.
It makes you uniquely men.
Uniquely men. Uniquely physically men in some cases. And it's also an area that there's competition involved. Literally, whose dick's bigger? It's an area of shame often when it comes to what do we use this thing for? I grew up in a Christian household and I was taught very clearly that sex was not meant for people that weren't married. And so why do we store a lot of our masculinity there is because of all those things, the uniqueness, the shame, the competition, all of it. My personal relationship with my penis, right? And to add a little context to this, I co-host an event here in New York. It's a live event. We do it monthly called The Discerning Dick. And it's almost like if locker room talk, it was locker room talk, but if we were telling the truth. And so we get into all the details about our dicks and our relationships with our dicks. And why is that even important? And what we have found is that when we're born, we're essentially given this potential weapon of mass creation or this potential weapon of mass destruction. And we're not given any kind of manual. We're not given any kind of guidelines or launch codes to these things. And so it just
here's the cheat codes.
Here's the cheat code. Right. Yeah. There's no like cheat codes for the penis. And oftentimes it's only by default. We're told one thing. I'll use my example. Don't have sex until you're married. Well, what did that tell me? That meant like, well, does that mean I shouldn't have any pleasure? Is masturbation wrong? Does that mean I can't do anything else with a woman? I mean, is even kissing going down the wrong path? And so now all of a sudden intimacy isn't something that I can really be part of because my dick's involved, potentially.
And why
is it like when I'm hard, is that an okay thing or is that not an okay thing? What if I do want something? So by default, through our faith, through our family, through our friends, we start to create this identity around our masculinity. And then everybody growing up has this same awkward feelings and we start to play it off. Now we're talking about jokes. Now we're talking about locker room talk. And now we're talking about accomplishment. And so the question is a complicated question as far as like why so much in our dick, because we got to prove that we're men. And the way we prove that we're men is either by showing off or using our dick. And for a long period of time, that's what I did.
Yeah. So, I mean, people all over are doing it. And I think the answer to that question is going to be different for everyone based on their own experiences, right? We have like collective experiences in our environment that do that, like religious teachings and that. Me personally, I don't have a penis, but as far as my sexuality is concerned, I wasn't raised, but I studied Jehovah's Witness for 10 years. I loved it. It did change my life tremendously. And I don't study it anymore. There was a chapter in a book it was a book that talked about lessons from the Bible. And if you're anywhere in a religious belief structure, there's books that you turn to for answers. If you have a question, you go to this certain book and it's going to help you answer the question. And so it was really a safety net for me. And there was a book that taught about lessons in the Bible. And there was this whole specific chapter about masturbation. And then, you know, just without going too deep into what that can do, you start to feel shame around feeling pleasure. And then just the mudslide that can create, right? So it's just sort of pervasive. And however, I don't think, I can only speak for America, right? I don't think it's pervasive in all other cultures. I think although, you know, I see a lot healthier things going on. But yeah, sexuality as a whole is just, I mean, it's a wormhole.
Mm-hmm. I find that the places in life in which we resist the most, or which we want to pull in and hold on to forever the most, pleasure, right, being one of those, that's where we find ourselves in the most trouble. And what I've seen, I've ran a sexual health company for the past 3 years, and I've seen some of those other international cultures, whether that's been India or Japan and many others, that really on the external resist this thing called sexuality. And that's where some of the most messed up stuff is. That's where some of the things are. So one of my goals when it comes to sexual health and even sexuality and the beliefs that we have around it is like, let's just identify where is it that we're resisting? Like, ooh, we can't talk about this. This is a no-go zone. Or where are we actually pulling in and trying to hold on to this thing called sexuality, which we need it and have to have it? And those are the areas that I love to talk about. And one of the reasons I love doing these podcasts, because we can talk about this kind of stuff in other ways that make it more flow, that make it more real. And so I'm not saying that we have to go out and like do our sexuality or resist and never talk about it. But instead we can like let this flow and live within the conversation that we're having here.
I'd love to bring in a perspective about resistance that I don't know. It just dropped in one day. I think I might've been swimming I was watching a video of a swimmer in some motivational video I was watching that day. You know, what's interesting is I recorded a podcast 2 days ago with this wonderful woman, and I was editing, watching the recording, and I kept catching myself saying, and I don't say, like, I've always been complimented on not saying ums. And I wonder if it's because I'm looking at myself in the camera and I'm seeing this and it's like kind of tweaking me out a little. So I'm here.
Well, I'll make you a deal on this podcast. If you say, I'll let you know.
Okay.
My go-to word, my filler word is like.
Normally mine is so, and I got kind of sick of it. Yeah. Which
okay.
is better than, though. Either of those I think are
like. Okay.
Like, okay. So
there it is.
what do I say? I don't even know what to say instead of so. I was watching this video of a swimmer, and I was thinking that bringing it back to the support and resistance, I'm watching this swimmer, and he's swimming through like underneath the water, and you can see the resistance of the water going on his body and his clothes and his hair. Like, you can see the resistance. He has to obviously use muscle to move forward in it. And it dropped in my head that whenever we, so I'm going to offshoot and then come back. So as humans, life in general expands, it grows. It's just the nature, right? It's fundamental that we are, we expand. And we like to expand, and it feels good to expand and learn and grow into something new rather than stagnancy, which then leads to death. And I'm watching this video. And, oh no, the main point here is, since we do love expansion, well, when you're deep into personal development or spiritual development, you're going to learn that when you feel that resistance towards anything, that means that there's an opportunity for growth, right? So we'd like deep dive into the resistance, exactly like what you said. And then I'm watching this guy swimming, and I'm seeing the resistance on his body. And, you know, my mind's going a million miles a minute, and I'm thinking like, man, all of the work he must have put in to become this great swimmer and blah, blah, blah. And then it hits me that resistance is present for him, because he has strength to swim. And so anytime we feel resistance, we're actually feeling support behind it, because something must be pushing us into the resistance. So that for me was a really beautiful image and way in my head of realizing when I do feel resistance around speaking about something or doing something for myself or creating something for myself or my students, that there's actually support there. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. And I appreciate that story and analogy, because in his first try, he probably didn't have that strength.
Yeah.
And by building that over a period of time, he's built that up. And I think that's the choice that we have, is either to succumb to the resistance and become stagnant, or to look at it and power through and start to build that muscle to the point where it becomes something beautiful, like what you just described.
Thank you. I'm wondering, how do you feel? So you've been doing this for a while, holding space for a lot of people to open and grow and expand their lives and relationships and sex life. How do you think that this work that you facilitate creates the most change for people? What are you seeing?
I would love to say that I am a certified expert in this type of conversation, that I'm some sort of psychologist or scientist even. I'm none of those. Right. And to be perfectly honest, I haven't been doing it for that long. For me, my story was one, I already told you about how I was brought up with Christianity, and then fast forward to the age of 30, and I'm 38 right now. So fast forward to the age of 30. And I'm living and working in Washington, D.C. I was doing consulting work for the FBI at the time. And I had my suit on, getting ready to go into the office in the morning. And I got a phone call. And the phone call was from a friend of mine who's a urologist. And at the end of that phone call, I finally disclosed, after about 3 months of feeling a certain pain, that my left testicle had been hurting me. And for 3 months, I didn't say anything to anyone. And just because my friend happened to be a urologist, happened to call me to make dinner plans, I thought, well, now is a good time to have this conversation with them.
Now, was it consistent? Like, were you feeling it all day?
No, not all day. It was dull and it was inconsistent. Right. At times it felt sharper. But yeah, the actual feeling what came and went and was more intense and less intense. But I knew something was up. I mean, I've had pain down there. Most guys do have pain down there, and you know, maybe you got hit in the nuts, maybe whatever it may be. But usually it's fleeting and it goes away at low level. And this kept coming back in different levels of intensity. Mm. And so I waited to do anything about it. And I finally said, hey, by the way, since we're having this conversation, do you mind me asking you a question? He said, sure. I've been feeling this pain in my testicle. What do you think? He said, how long? I said, 3-4 months maybe. He said, you're an idiot. Why did you not contact me sooner? Like, I'm your friend. I'm a urologist. This is literally what I do. He said, we need to get you in the hospital today. And I said, yeah, I put my suit on. I'm going into the office. Like, I'll take care of this later. He goes, no, you don't understand. This could be really serious. And so I went in that day, and I was diagnosed at the age of 30 with both testicular cancer and chlamydia on the same day. Mm. And that was the first time at the age of 30 that I'd even been tested for STDs. And so I had a lot of questions for the doctor, some around chlamydia, a lot around cancer. And I said, well, am I going to die? He said, well, you got about a 96% chance of survival. I said, well, 96 is not bad. I'll take that. But then all the other questions started to come in. Well, what are women going to think about me? I was single and I only have one ball. Like, my sexual performance going to go down? Like, can I still have kids? Now, at that point in time, a lot of my identity, like we talked about earlier on this podcast, was wrapped around my dick, wrapped around my sexuality.
Did you lose the testicle that day?
No, but 2 days later I did.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he told me, he said, we're going to take it out. And I said, well, there has to be a different way. You don't have to actually take out my testicle. He's nope. That's the only way we do it. I'm like, wow. Okay. I was not prepared for this today. Yeah. And so I tell that story simply because that was the starting point for me, for starting to ask some really deep internal questions, like existential questions. And so this work that I do around sex and sexuality, it started there, but by no means professionally. When I went through chemotherapy, I had a lot of friends and family members asking me, how am I doing? And quite frankly, and none of this, by the way, has been altruistic. My entire path has not been altruistic. I was just tired of answering questions. So I decided to write a blog about it. And I wrote a blog called The One Big Nut. And it was just an update on where I'm at, what I'm doing, added some humor to it. And when I got done with chemotherapy a few months later, I realized that a lot of people were checking out the blog. A lot of people had questions. And so I started responding to people. And the same thing started happening in life. And so what I became was a safe space to have this conversation, because I was publicly talking about this very personal testicle type situation. And by the way, at this time, I had mentioned nothing about the chlamydia. This was purely about testicular cancer. Like, I mean, cancer happened to me, right? I didn't do anything to get cancer. Right. And so what it did, and I'll get back to your question here in a second, it opened up this really safe space for people to have a conversation. And I started hearing about all these other sexual health situations people, both men and women, have been in. When I got back to the office, there was about a 55-year-old African-American guy. I had met him one other time before this. He pulled me into the side, into the hallway after a meeting. He said, "Hey, Brian, I got to ask you a question." I said, "Sure." He said, "Can you take a look at my testicle? Like, it's been hurting. I'm not sure if it's a thing." I'm like, "I'm not going to look at your testicle. I'm not a doctor. You're probably okay because you're outside the age range and African Americans typically don't get testicular cancer. So you're probably okay, but definitely go see a doctor and I don't need to look at your pants right now." And so what I found most successful and just building off of that is being able to create a safe space for people to feel comfortable talking about these things they've really never talked about before. They maybe even thought subconsciously, maybe not even fully conscious of, like, this is something that's bothering me. And so whether it's the space that we create on our podcast, The Man Amongst Men, whether it's the Discerning Dick events that we have here in New York, whether it's one-on-one conversations that we have, whether it's through the app that I developed that allows people to talk to a doctor and get tested for STDs, right? It's all about creating a new space to have this conversation in. And so that's where I found the most success. That's where I found the most interest, and where people want to be able to have these conversations in empowered ways, but aren't really sure how to go about doing it.
And the opening up for conversation, I'm sure breeds confidence in that, what, they're not alone.
They're not, and that was the biggest thing for me. When I started hearing that other people were going through something similar, maybe it wasn't testicular cancer, but it was some sort of insecurity, right? Mine became performance and having one nut, and like, oh, like that seems kind of strange, kind of weird. But when I realized through these conversations that we were all going through a certain element of that same thing around sexual insecurity, I was like, oh, actually, I'm not that strange. I'm not alone. It turns out a lot of people have these sort of questions. And then when I started doing customer research for the company that I launched called Beam, B-I-E-M, I started going to bars and restaurants and parks in New York City and started talking to women about their sexual health situations. And I saw a whole new perspective. I heard about condom negotiations for the first time. I heard about a thing called stealthing for the first time. And I was like, what is this stuff? Like, there's a whole other perspective out here. It's a female perspective on sexual health. Like, this is wild. And so what I've been doing since then is really collecting these different perspectives of people and allowing the conversations to be had. And that's a lot of the work that I do, is just allowing people to have that feeling of, actually, I'm not alone. And actually, I can practice, because with practice, in terms of opening up these conversations and having these in an open setting, comes confidence. And with confidence comes great decisions.
Yeah, totally. And being able to create the life that you know that you deserve because you are confident enough that you can, so you're not worried about the how, because the how is what stops people, right?
Right.
What did I just want to ask you or say? Oh, so holding space again is like, it's such a wonderful thing, especially for men to feel supported and heard without feeling like their moms and aunts are watching them and giving them like the googly eyes of cuteness, you know. Still, I see that you went through this experience. You started sharing it because you got tired of people asking you questions, which I can absolutely relate with. I almost died of Crohn's disease twice in like 2 years. And the second time it was like really, really much worse than the first. And it was the same 6 questions. And then they give me the same response. So I totally understand that. And what a great idea to start writing about it. So you get to this point and then people start coming around you. But my question is, you still, in order to do it effectively, you would have needed to learn how to hold space for men. Where did that come from?
Where did that come from? Wow. I've never been asked that question before.
It's exciting.
And what's coming up for me immediately is through a lot of examples in my life, and more recently, not necessarily. Actually, that's not true. Let me go back. My grandfather, who passed away about 12 years ago, but he was a pastor of an Assembly of God church, and I didn't realize this until just this moment, but I saw him hold space all the time. I would go as a pastor, and I didn't realize that's what he was doing. He was being a pastor, but I would go to hospitals and be at the deathbed of people that were dying. He would pray for them. I would go to weddings and to funerals, and he would always include me and say like, "Hey, say a few words, Brian." I'm like, "What?" And wow, talk about like that as holding space. So I think I learned a lot of that certainly from him at a younger age, but didn't really connect the dots. More recently, I've had a coach, John O'Connor, and I've had a partner, a business partner, Dominic Cortuccio, and they're both coaches. And those two men have really taught me how to hold space. I'm part of a men's group that meets every Monday night, and we go through a process where we're quite literally practice feeling our feelings. And I think the combination of the past and
don't you mean getting example. Feedback from your nodal points?
Yes, exactly. Feedback from those data points, exactly. Not feel practice getting our data points. I think those are the two areas. And I never, Sean, until you mentioned this, I never really considered it a skill. It's just something that happened over a period of time.
And it felt just. I'm sorry.
And I'm probably still learning it. I definitely am still learning it.
Oh, easy. I mean, when do you stop, you know? Mm-hmm. You said that you had, so the grandfather story is pretty profound because we learn through imitation, right? And if you respected him, which it sounds like you did, you were going to do what you could to imitate him to be a man, right? When you're this young boy. And I want to talk about your these two other men you brought up. So just for clarity, you said one was a coach you hired and one was a friend that was a coach?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. John O'Connor is somebody I work with currently.
Okay.
He's my coach. And then Dominic Cortuccio is who I run the Discerning Dick with here in New York. And we run a podcast called Man Amongst Men.
Dominic.
He's my co-host on that. You met Dominic, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't recognize the last name. Mm-hmm. So my question then, investing into your growth through hiring a coach or a mentor, what was the point for you where you had had enough and you wanted to outsource your help?
Oh, this is such a good one. I was never, ever, if you would have asked me even 4 years ago, would you ever hire a life coach? I was like, why would you waste your money on that? That seems ridiculous. Two things happened. One is I met this guy, John O'Connor, at an event that Dominic ran at his house. It was a men's group. And he started telling a story about him and his wife. And I won't go into the details of that story. But what I recognized in that story was I was like, oh, they have a really interesting relationship that's very open, very communicative, that's non-reactive. And like, I want relationships like that. That's pretty cool. And I didn't know John at this time. I just heard him talking up on the stage. And so that's pretty cool. Then I met him afterwards. And immediately, he was one of the few men I've ever met in my life where I immediately felt not just a connection towards, but I felt like no level of competition. Mm. I felt like he was just very flowy, very easy to connect with. And I said, huh, this guy has either done something or knows something I don't really know. He seems very calm and relaxed. And I knew that was something I was interested in. Now, I didn't hire him for a couple of years after that, but that was always a data point for me. I was like, this is an interesting individual. The second thing that happened to me is I started to see a pattern in my life where I would make a decision. And that decision would come back and bite me in the ass. I did one in real estate, one in business, one in relationship. And the pattern I recognized in all of those is at the onset, in the very beginning, before I made the decision, I had this little feeling in my stomach, this feeling that kind of connected my stomach and my chest. And I was like, like, what is that? And I overwrote it. I was like, nope, don't worry about it. Like, you've looked at the financials, like, she logically makes sense.
She sounds good on paper.
That. Like, yeah, sounds great on paper, like all of that. And the third, when I recognized this and the third thing went astray, I was like, there's something I'm not seeing. I'm blind to, and I need to understand what that is.
So
I called John and I said, hey, I think there's something that is in me that's telling me to do something and I keep ignoring it. I want to work on this.
And you notice that with each decision, you had that some kind of weirdness that you ignored. Like, that was each of those decisions, and were close together.
They were not close together. These were years apart. But there was a common theme. And I was like, you know, I've had, let's call it 4 disaster points in my life. Like, what is common between them? I think it's a healthy thing to do, whether it's just in the relationship side of things or in life. And what is the common thing between them? And of course, I had all the excuses in the world on why they happened and why it wasn't my fault and I'm okay and the protective barrier and all of that. But if I assume that maybe that I'm the common denominator in all of it, then what is it? What was the thing that I was feeling? And that was it. There was something in me that was like screaming, no, 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 no. But I put that aside and said, yes. And I could see like the situation was already doomed in all of those scenarios.
So that, I think, is going to lead us right into the meat of what I think we both want to talk about. And a little fun fact. So what did you call the you had 4 what in your life? The pain points?
Disasters for situations that didn't turn out so well.
I think, yeah, I'll have to rewatch the recording because whatever you said was perfect. So I'm creating this purpose program, and the main chunk of it is diving into our history to find our patterns of healing and through our pain points. And I call them pain points. And so whatever you said, I think I might use that term instead. But what that does, and where I want to take the conversation, is if we look back and we see like our main 3-5 pain points that we've had, and we really know how to dive into them and dissect them and see our patterns of healing or our patterns of the opposite, we can then pull from that the lesson that we're here to learn, which then moves into the lesson that we're here to teach, which then moves into our purpose. So you just sort of connected your own story with, because what you're talking about is intuition. And then in the very beginning of the episode, we were talking about, you know, teaching that to people, how to actually listen to their body. So when then did you find, actually, how long after you lost a testicle did you make this decision?
To hire the coach? Mm-hmm. It was 6 years.
Okay. What then? So you had all this happening. You noticed the patterns because that what happened in the beginning woke you up. My question is, what was it? Oh, did you have an experience of like, holy shit, this is what I want to do now? This, I'm clear. I'm a little more clear on my vision now, and I'm going to take a big shift in my life.
I feel as though that's a work in progress right now. Testicular cancer, chlamydia, was not something that I had any particular interest in whatsoever. I happened to be working at Accenture. I was doing digital strategy, and I knew that I wanted to be doing something different than consulting. And I said, I can take these skills that I've developed over a 13-year career at Accenture, apply them to a problem that I know exists, because my problem at that time was talking about anything sexually related, including my health. I said, there has to be a better way, a new experience that we can create. And so at that point in time, I was reprogramming my brain. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I was listening to motivational speeches on the way to work on every day as I was walking. Les Brown was one of the guys that somebody had introduced me to, and I didn't know that's what I was doing. And then finally I said, I know that this Accenture path isn't for me. I think it's time to move down this path. I want to create something on my own, and did that. And I became, over a period of years, like the sexual health guy that can talk about these things openly and honestly and vulnerably. And that has then shifted, and it is currently shifting into, well, is sexual health, is that my purpose? And I feel like that's a question that a lot of people are asking. Like, well, is that my thing? Is that your thing? And so what I found over this period of time is that it's bigger than that. And I'm still honing in on exactly what that is. So to say that I'm sitting here and very clear on what that is, I can't quite say. What I do know is this: it's a belief that I have that everybody here on earth, we do have purposes. And I think that we can find those and align those to the work that we do. And sometimes they're one and the same, sometimes they're different. And so one thing I am interested in when it comes to purpose and what my purpose is I love to create environments, and you can see I've done this in the sexual health realm, that allow people to explore, find, and grow in their skills and in their purpose. And so that's what I like to cultivate that. I like to cultivate that type of an environment. And whether that's in a men's circle or whether that's on a podcast or whether that's as part of a larger company, that's where I'm at. That's what I really enjoy doing. And being able to talk about these taboo type subjects is a great stepping stone. It was a great skill builder for creating and cultivating that kind of safe environment.
Well, that's a great answer. There's two things that I'd like to speak into. Which one do I want to talk about? Okay. So you're talking about, because you've been doing what you're doing now for a little while, which is different than what you're doing before, just in, you've been doing the sexual health thing now, right? You're like in it, you're committed at this point, or you've been committed, even if your focus is shifting. And something that I notice, something that I notice around the purpose conversation is exactly what you said. And people will think that they found it and then they'll follow it. And then it starts to feel heavy and they're not as like, quote, motivated as they were before to take the actions. And something feels a little bit off and it's confusing because why am I feeling off about this thing that I think is my purpose and this thing that is going to help thousands and millions in the collective globe? Why? It doesn't seem to make any sense. And so as far as the clarity conversation is concerned, you, from what I see, you got very clear that you wanted to make a difference in this certain area. And that created a lot of aligned action for you. You took a lot of aligned action to do so. And it was exciting and all of these things. And now you may be at this point of like, oh, well, maybe there's more. And I think that's just how purpose works, right? Because I came to this awareness the other day. So my worst life, my worst fear in life, we all have different ones. My partner, he fears that he's going to be like manic depressive to this crazy extent because he saw that in his family. I fear that I'm going to turn into, and this, it sounds funny, but like it's a scary fear for me. I'm going to turn into a crazy cat lady who doesn't have electricity and just spends her days talking and thinking about the things that she could have done while the raccoons run around her house eating out of her milk jugs. Like that's a very, that would be my worst. If I woke up in 20 years, that would be my worst life alone. Right. And from what I know about whatever you want to call it, the universe, in my beliefs about living in a friendly, expansive universe, I believe that even if I were to live my worst life, that I would still be a token and a resource in the growth and expansion of the universe, because the life is going to learn from me, that whatever the collective thing is going to learn, or whoever the people were around me, maybe people are going to see me and not want to be like me. So they're going to learn from me. So no matter what life, I feel like purpose is this conversation. Like purpose is beautiful and I love it and it's what I teach about, and it doesn't matter because we are all still going to be utilized and still matter to the planet even if we live our worst life, because that's just how the collective works. It's just, we expand. saying that, I think that it always grows and we always expand into it, because what fun would it be if it just was monotonous? You figure this out and you just do this for 30 years, you know? And when we get, so we get clarity, we get excited, we take action. And then it's our responsibility to, when we feel that lull, that we get to have deeper clarity now. And so some people take, so some people who are creating their lives, I can speak the best into entrepreneurs, but I know that you work with people in corporate jobs as well. When people are creating their life, so many people start, they get really excited and they start and they're going up the hill and they make a little bit of money and they get people knowing what they're doing. And then they hit that lull to where now it's time to expand more. And they just think it's not for them because their mind is telling them this. And then they fall off and they don't do it. And then they feel all the things they feel around that. So with people like us, I think it's our responsibility to dive deeper. And the second, and we can do that by diving deeper into our history and those patterns, right? And the second thing I want to bring in to connect those two is, and this may be a taboo, and it probably is a really taboo subject, because for me as a woman, taboo might not be the right word, but uncomfortable. It is for me around people that I don't know, or even around certain members of my family, especially having that conversation as a man. And what I'm finding as I dive deeper into my purpose, and what I'm hearing you talk about intuition, I just hit the mic, is that what it boils down to, if we want to create our life, which first of all, we're creating our life whether we know it or not, but if we want to consciously create our life to look a certain way, what it all comes down to is faith. And so whatever our faith, wherever our faith lies, right? And I feel like people who go on this journey, whatever it is, their purpose gets closer and closer to sharing faith in whatever the way they want to. Maybe they call it God, maybe they call it connecting to source, but like that, whatever the fuck that intuition is speaking to us, it's speaking to us. So we get to listen. Do you feel me there?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot that I'm trying to connect to in what you're saying. And I feel like, to be perfectly honest, I feel like I got lost a little bit in it.
Okay.
But when you say faith or source or phi or whatever it may be, you know, do our purposes start somewhere? And then do they lead somewhere? And as they lead somewhere, is that getting closer and closer and closer to faith or to source or to true purpose? And I think that if this is what you're saying, that it's a journey, it's not a destination, mm-hmm. then I'm fully on board with that. And I fully feel you on it. And the question I get from a lot of people is like, well, where do you start? Like, I don't really care about all that much. And I said, okay, cool. Like then that means you're numb. So how do we stop the numbness? And I'll tell you a quick story. This I mentioned before, I was living in Washington, D.C. And I was diagnosed with cancer, and I go through chemotherapy. And then I did, my parents took care of me in Chicago as I did that. And then I came back to Washington, D.C. I got a bald head. I start working again at the FBI and with Accenture as a consultant. And I reached this point where I'm like, what am I doing here? I don't really know why am I in Washington, D.C.? Why am I still working for Accenture? Like, what is my purpose here? And I started to ask myself some pretty extreme questions like, okay, Brian, if you had $10 billion, what would you do? And I recognized that, like, I don't know. Like, I came up with answers. I would buy an island, right? Richard Branson seemed to have it figured out. Like, maybe I would buy an island. That makes sense. You would do that with $10 billion. I don't know if that would make me happier. I really don't. I don't know if $10 billion would make me happy. I don't know. And I had this one moment where my boss at Accenture, he asked me to go to happy hour. And he said, hey, he's like, this is a really important happy hour, because not only is, he's like, my boss is going and my boss's boss is going. So for me, there's like three layers. And this is like the upper echelons of Accenture, which is a 350,000 person organization, right? Like, huge organization. And he said, all these guys, these four guys, you, me being Brian, right? The boss, my boss, his boss, and his boss, right? Four people. So we get to happy hour, and we're standing at this pub table, and we all got our beers, and the head honcho guy brings up this subject that, thank God it was him that brought it up, because otherwise we would have laughed it off. He said, "Do you guys have a spirit animal?" I said, "Oh, that's interesting. We haven't even had a drink yet, and we're talking spirit animals with the boss's 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 boss." And so I'm thinking about it. I hadn't really thought about a spirit animal before. And he goes, and this is the head guy. He goes, mine would be a bald eagle. And I was like, oh, it's a good one. And he's like, because I feel like I have this massive vision. I've got this great perspective of like looking down on everything. And I was like, oh, we're in Washington, D.C. That's a pretty good one. So then the second guy goes, oh, he goes, I would be a lion. Because I've got like my team, I've got my pride, like king of the jungle, like rawr. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm like, holy shit, like lion's a pretty good one too. I'm like, kind of got the king bird, king of the jungle. Yeah. And then it's my boss's turn. My boss goes, he's like, yeah, he's like, I feel like I would be a shark because sharks are always moving, they're constantly growing. They've got a keen sense of electricity and smell. And I was like, wow, that's a pretty good one too. So like the jungle's taken, the air is taken, the ocean's taken. And I'm starting to freak out a little bit. And I was like, I guess I would be a jellyfish. And I felt myself panic in that moment. I'm like, oh my God, like, why did I just say jellyfish? Why jellyfish? And my boss tries to cover for me. He's like, oh, right, Brian, like jellyfish. You mean like the man of war jellyfish? Like the big bad one that could kill surfers. I was like, in that moment of panic, I was like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, the little cute one that's got the little iridescent circle in it. Like, doesn't really even sting any sting humans. And he's just like, right. So I was so embarrassed. I had maybe two sips out of my beer at that point. I put it down on the table. I looked at everybody and said, hey guys, I've got a lot of work to do. Thank you for this invite. I need to go home and do some work. So I put my beer down. I walk out completely embarrassed. I've got about a 10-minute walk home. And I remember thinking, I'm like, why would you say jellyfish? That was the dumbest answer you could have possibly said. And then as I started walking, about 5 minutes into my walk, I'm like, dude, you had a moment of truth. You had a moment that your analytical brain was overstimulated. You had so much pressure on you, and you literally blurted out the truth because you actually feel like at this point in your life, a freaking jellyfish. Why do I feel like a jellyfish? I feel like I say yes to whatever comes by me. I feel like I'm floating. I don't really have any direction. Like I'll take whatever food comes by. I can't really go hunt on my own.
Somebody touches you and you shock the shit out of them.
Yeah, that's it. Right. And yeah, I'm highly reactive. Right. And I felt completely like a jellyfish. And it was at that moment that I realized, I'm like, something's got to change. I don't know what it is. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why I'm living here, but like something's got to change. And that's what all I did at that point. This is after chemo, after everything else. And so I didn't all of a sudden like get diagnosed with cancer and then have my purpose, have my thing.
Right.
And so I called a friend in New York. Accenture Digital had just launched in New York. He was running part of it. And I said, hey, man, I need a change. I need to get out of DC. I don't really know what I want yet, but what do you got in New York? And so I moved to New York. And that's when I just started taking those baby steps without any real direction other than following a little tiny bit of intuition. Because at the time, I was working on a digital app for law enforcement because I was working at the FBI. And I was like, oh, Accenture Digital. Like maybe I could go learn more over there and then reapply it to law enforcement. Like, let me just go in that direction. And so it wasn't my purpose. It wasn't that I knew I was going to go do this thing. And I had already gone to the testicular cancer thing. So it was only by going to New York for a couple of years, learning about digital strategy, meeting new people, having conversations with people in this area that then led me to this first part of my purpose, which is creating a new digital experience for sexual health and talking on it. And so now like I'm that guy. I'm the guy that can talk about that stuff. I'm the guy that can build apps. I'm the guy that can run a company. And that is still evolving from that very jellyfish moment.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
So my only advice is if you're in a jellyfish moment and you're floundering around, not really sure why you're here, ask yourself extreme questions. What would you do with $10 billion? And then just follow whatever instinct is in you. If it's to go garden, go garden, see what happens. If it's to go run for the first time on a track that you don't even know exists today, go do that and see what happens. Because I didn't know. I just knew where I was at wasn't what I wanted to be doing. And that's a good enough start.
That story is hilarious. I read something about that. I was searching you out, and I read some, I think you talked about that recently on a podcast.
Probably.
And it's so funny that the other three guys literally picked the wind, the air, the water, and the land, like the kings of all three. That's so funny. I literally
couldn't one up them. I was just like, ugh.
So when we're in the moments of, and this is a share for the listeners, when we're in the moments of feeling like a jellyfish and just kind of feeling worthless and not understanding why we're here and just like we're flopping around aimlessly, that hurts a lot of times, and we feel uncomfortable around thinking about that because we feel like we question our worth and we question what we have to bring to our lives or to the world, however big your vision is. And understand that even a little jellyfish is a crucial part in the whole. And so you just start there and then ask yourself all those other questions. Now, Brian, I'm curious, where is your intuition pulling you now? Because I'm getting something, not a direction, but I just can see that your mind's been going about it.
If you have answers for me, I would love to hear them. There's a lot going on right now. I have this sense of things I just enjoy. I think that from an intuition standpoint, things I really enjoy. I love doing the podcast with Dominic. It's so much fun. The reason I find it so much fun is because we can go really deep on subjects that most people give either no attention to or a cursory glance, but it's universal. And so the things I really love that I'm drawn to are those things that are universal. Now, I love it that we have PhDs out there and doctors and scientists that really go deep on other subjects that are not universal, that are solving huge things like global warming and technology and all these like amazing things. That's not me. My intuition really is taking me to like what is universal to us. And what does that mean? Universal, work, relationships, sexuality, right? All of the personal growth, all of these things to me are very universal. And I love to go deep on them because I feel they're meaningful.
How do you describe the word universal to yourself? What's your experience of
that? Universal is something that every single human, or at least just about every single human can connect to.
Absolutely.
If I was sitting here talking about Bitcoin, there are some people that could very easily connect with me. There are other people that would completely tune out, and in a large percentage of them. But when I'm talking about relationships, when I'm talking about work, like just what is work? When we're talking about sex, everybody, just about everybody can say, that I can connect with. So for me, that's what universal is.
And is it important for you to connect to talk about those universal topics because there's a lot of like good stuff to learn there?
For sure.
Okay. Do you ever read, I didn't actually read this specific book, but there's a book called The Field, or do you know what Einstein's spooky action at a distance is?
No.
Oh my God. Okay. Do not let me just get off. There's so many things that I can talk about right now. So, okay. When we think of the physical world, like matter, like we have particles, right? We have what makes up an atom, like physical matter stuff. When you take all of that physical matter, and they, like scientifically, you take all of that physical matter, they've reduced it down to this size of a, they call it Planck, which is like the super tiny, tiny particle. And it's the smallest particle that they can measure at the moment, I believe. So it's not like a proton. It's like down, 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 super small. If they take the density of all of the particles that they're calling Planck's, the density of everything that they know in the universe through what we're seeing in the telescopes, through what we know about like scientific laws of weight and gravity and all of this. And they take the density of everything in the universe and they put it into the side and they squish it into like one piece. The whole of our universe, from what we can see, the observable universe, is 99.999% empty space. And so we have all this space in between. And that's not a super people hear that all the time. We have all this space in between. And within that space, there's a lot of study. And they were calling it black matter. There's different names for it, right? Some people will call it, when you hear people talking about the quantum field, they're talking about this sort of space. And what they're finding, so my favorite word and term that I've heard to describe it is, it's totally slipped. I am slipping at the moment. So it'll come to me. So this space, they're diving into research in it. And the spooky action at a distance is something that Einstein studied. And he took a particle, and I don't remember what kind of particle it was, and he split it. He split the particle and then took it like 17 miles apart. And they used, they used to be in style where they put the lights through the tubes and like it would make like a flower. Do you know what I mean?
Like fiber optics?
Fiber optics. So they use like a fiber optic system and they split this particle. And on either end of the 17 miles, are you following me so far?
I'm with you so far.
Okay. Either end of the 17 miles, they had people. So I'm on video. How can I speak this? So my right hand, they would tweak this particle over here after it's split and they do something to it. Let's say like they, I don't know exactly, but let's say like they make it rotate left. Well, the left particle 17 miles away would react, which is crazy, but it's not too crazy. The crazy part is that it would react in time exactly when this particle was manipulated. So that shows us that there's something connecting these particles that once were connected. And the history of the universe and the Big Bang, they used to say everything was connected. So now if we really dive into the space and what it brings to us, just the field, they call it the field. There's so much connection in the field and opportunity in the field that when we're having these conversations like you're having with Dominic, like that does touch everybody and everything we do touches everybody. So if we hold a great responsibility for that, we can move in our purpose because it's not about us anymore. It's about everything else. Mm. So I would highly suggest for you to just, I could send you some resources or something, but I think that you would really enjoy it based on the universal term that you were just telling me about. Mm-hmm. It's super interesting.
Hmm. Everything's connected.
Yeah. Scientifically, which is so cool. I like science. It brings it home to me because people like use these fluffy terms and like as much as I love philosophy, like science really like makes it real.
There was the one book people often ask me like how do you go from bro to woo? And I would agree. I was definitely more on the bro side of things and I'm probably at least a little bit on the woo side of things now. And one of the first books I read it purely for scientific purposes, was The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton.
Yeah.
And I loved it because it talked about cellular biology, which sounds really boring, but it talks about how a cell is created, like not how it's created, but the elements of a cell, the cell wall, what it lets in, what it doesn't let in, and how that we are made up of all these little cells and our body actually does the exact same thing. And our ecosystem actually does the exact same thing and how our belief can literally physically change our cellular structure. And I thought that was pretty woo and pretty out there, but he did it in such a great scientific way. It was enough for me to tap into it and say, ah, there is something more here. Like, I want to learn more. So I think that for me, for somebody that was very skeptical, very logical, didn't really believe in intuition, was a great starting point.
It that book, Biology of Belief, for any of you guys listening, is really good, and it's not that long. I'd listened to it on audio, so mm-hmm. It didn't feel that long to me.
Yeah.
Okay, it's 11:10. I'm going to leave it up to you. I can keep talking, but we can definitely wrap it up if you have other plans.
I do got to go. Okay. Let's wrap it up. But however you want to wrap it up, like let's give that space to happen.
Okay. So I would like to, let me make sure there's not any other questions I didn't cover. Really quickly, if it could be a really quick answer, and totally let me know if it's not. The one thing that Adam and I were talking about is the balance of like masculinity and the intensity of that. And then how do we find the line where it crosses into like actually being destructive rather than using like anger in a good way?
Mm-hmm. Can you restate the question?
Yeah. So there's like masculine men, even women, there's masculinity that can be really like overly masculine, and they're violent, they're egotistical, and then there can be like really too feminine, to where we don't, there's no like nothing created. Where's the balance of that before it turns?
Yeah. I like to flip the question on its head, because I don't think it's a balance.
Okay.
What I believe is what you're describing is one is a very immature masculine. It's a toddler banging his hands on the tray in which his food sits. And it's a very immature, reactive masculine. And when we think patriarchy, that's a very immature, highly reactive, egocentric masculinity. And what I would really love to impress on everybody listening to this is that's not how masculinity should be. Masculinity can be beautiful. It can hold space. It can be directive. It can get things done. And it can do that in a very caring, very protective way. And that, to me, is the mature masculine.
Mm.
And there's a book, Robert Moore, who's written a lot on masculinity, and it's I'm gonna mess up the title exactly, but it's like Warrior, Magician, Lover, King, okay. Lover, Warrior, Magician. I forget the order that it's in, but it's those four words. And he talks a lot about what is masculinity, what is immature masculinity, what is the mature masculine. And so the reason I don't think it's a balance is because it's an evolution of what we are grown up to think that masculinity is. And that's the problem. Like, especially in America, certainly where I grew up, there was no transition from child and immature masculine and child to a mature masculine. There was no rite of passage or teaching into that. And a lot of people ask me, like, well, Brian, isn't it just an age thing? Like, a lot of women will come to me and say, like, I only date guys that are, you know, 33 years or older, because those guys have it more figured out than the younger. And I can tell you right now,
that
there is a higher likelihood that they've had enough time in life to get to the mature masculine. But I know a lot of guys that are in their 40s and in their 50s and their 60s and their 70s. I met a guy on his deathbed about 6 months ago, one of the most immature masculine guys I've ever met. And it doesn't just happen over a period of time. It happens over a period of introspection, and it happens over a period of understanding and being open, that the mature masculine can come out. And so the mature masculine is one that can hold space. It's one that is, Viktor Frankl said that there's a space between stimulus and response. Mm. And in the immature masculine, that space is so small, we can't even choose anything, because in that space is our choice. And so a mature masculine can feel stimulus, can be triggered. And that can trigger all kinds of things. It can trigger anger and rage or love and connection. And there's also a space between that and how we react. And so that to me is the mature masculine. There is a mantra that I use every single day in meditation. And it came from a guy, Michael Singer. He wrote Untethered Soul. He wrote Surrender Experiment. And he recently had an 8-hour video/audio course. And this is where I got this from. He said, the most spiritual thing that we can do is to recognize when something comes up, when we're triggered in some way, to recognize it. And then we have a choice. We can either suppress it and be like, oh, this doesn't exist. It's not an okay thing. Like jealousy is a great one. I'm great. When it comes to jealousy, I'm great at just like suppressing the hell out of that. Like, you aren't okay, jealousy. Like, you're not even here right now. I'm ignoring you. Right, so we have one option to suppress it. We have another option to express it and to be like, oh, jealousy, like this guy's terrible. Like, he's doing terrible things. Ah, an attack. And we have another choice. And the other choice is to relax into it, know that it's there, and release it. And just by the prompt, people, well, how do you do that? Right? It's really simple. Take a few breaths. Mm-hmm. Recognize and say, hey, thank you for being here. What's your purpose here? And that in that way, I don't have to suppress it. I don't have to express it, but I can release it. And I find healing in that. And so my mantra every single day is really simply, the purpose of my life is to let go of my stuff. And when I say stuff, I don't mean the physical. I don't mean all. I mean these things that are coming up in me is to release it, to let it go. And I think that's the mature masculine. And I'm still, by the way, really working on this. I am by no means there. But I at least have the tools now that can help create more of that space in between stimulus and response that can create a more mature masculine that I think this world needs. And I don't think is part of the patriarchy.
I love how you talked about it as a constant evolution, because it is, like, it totally is. And I think when we don't learn how to let those feelings, like, feel the, like, don't learn how to let those feelings go rather than do those other two options, when that happens and we suppress them or we respond in an ineffective way, that's when disease shows up. Like, it just is. It happened to me. So beautiful. Thank you for answering that.
Let me hit one more thing. I know we got to wrap up here.
Yeah.
But this is more into the woo space. So doctors told me when I was diagnosed with testicular cancer that it's not genetic. There's no connection to environment. It just happens. That's really hard for me to believe. I believe there's probably something that caused me to get testicular cancer. I don't know what it is. There's probably something. And years from now, we may even figure it out. I do believe that I grew up with such an anxiety around sex and intimacy that for years I found the one thing that could numb that allowed me to do it, which was alcohol. And so from the age of whatever it was, let's call it 16 to 36, 20 years, I figured that alcohol was a thing that could get me out of my own head, let that anxiety drop, and just do the thing called sex.
Now, to interrupt you really quickly, mm-hmm. from what I remember in your story, you used the alcohol, and even though you hated talking about sex, you were very sexual.
Yeah, because that was like the repression. It was like, oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. Yeah, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Right. And so, where was I going with the story?
Oh, I'm so sorry. You were talking about how thought alcohol let that out. That was your gateway into feeling.
What did you say though, right before we were about to wrap up?
Oh, that when we suppress it, disease shows up.
Ah, thank you. Perfect. So exactly. So I used alcohol to temporarily numb my feelings on this, but still had, you wake up sober the next day, I still had all kinds of anxiety associated with this. And so there is a belief in me that testicular cancer, sure, maybe there was external environment sort of stuff going on. Maybe it's genetic. Who really knows? But I do believe that in a certain way, I manifested that. Because there was so much anxiety around my sexuality that universe, source, God had to teach me something. And my lesson coming out of testicular cancer is like, hey, dude, like, your power is not in your dick. Like, stop it. Like, let it go. Like, let all this anxiety go around how you're living your life around women and trying to get women and da 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 da. Because your power is not there. Your power is here. Your power is in your heart. So start with that. And so this whole like repression thing or suppression thing and it's real. Oh. And did that cause my testicular cancer? Could have. It absolutely could have. I believe there's a very tight connection between our thoughts, our emotions, and our body. And it certainly could have.
So that was beautiful. And before, when we wrap up, I'm just going to ask you about a couple of the things that you're doing, but I just wanted to acknowledge you on, because even though it didn't happen like, bam, you got cancer and your life changed, you still decided to focus on the thoughts that allowed you to become powerful rather than focus on the thoughts that allowed you to become, you know, maybe dead by now. And so I just want to acknowledge that and acknowledge the space that you're holding and acknowledge how you're starting the conversation with men and women too. And because masculinity is it's not just inherent in men. Women have masculinity and masculine traumas. And so, yeah, thank you so much. And I'm so glad that you're on the journey and I'm really excited to see what's next for you. To wrap it up,
Thank you for that, Sean. I do appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. I just want to hear, tell me one more time about the discerning dick. Is it worth, like, I'm in Cleveland. Is it worth like coming out for a weekend and the podcast? Or I thought you said you had one other thing going on I wanted to hear about.
So there's three things you should know. One, every month we have an event called the Discerning Dick. And there's a different focus on it every single time, but it's around really, it's co-ed, first of all, but it's men sharing. And so women come, they provide their wisdom and their support in it, absolutely. But women also told us they want to hear from guys in this space. And so we talk about a lot of different subjects. We've had subjects in the past on what creates our beliefs and behaviors when it comes to sexuality, faith, family, and friends. We've had discussions on performance, like what is sexual performance and what does that look like? How does that affect? We had one recently that women came in and it was called Women Teach Men, and they taught us everything that they want guys to know. So we've had a great, maybe we get between 75 and 100 people there every month in New York. If you're anywhere, if you're in Cleveland, if you're in LA, if you're in Texas, like you should definitely come to this.
And how long is it?
Take all these ideas and take them to your city. How long is it? It's the last 2.5 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. 2.5 hour workshop-y sort of experience. So absolutely worth it. We've got a lot of people coming in from Philadelphia, from the Carolinas that do that monthly.
That's awesome.
So that's the one thing. The second thing you should know about is the podcast that Dominic and I do called The Man. Is it The Man? I should really know
that. I just looked it up for my partner, Man Amongst Men.
Man Amongst Men. Okay, Man Amongst Men. So the reason we started doing that is because we were doing these live events and people were like, hey, can you go a little deeper on these subjects? And so we were having a lot of one-on-one conversations. And Dominic said, maybe we should just do a podcast. I've never done a podcast before. I'm not sure how to do this, but okay, sounds good. And it's been a total blast. And there's a lot of great material there now. So definitely go check that out, Man Amongst Men podcast. And the third thing, if you really wanted to go deep, we just held our first men's retreat out in Denver, Colorado, up in the Rockies for a 3-day, was it Friday, Saturday, Sunday event. And that was life-changing for a lot of the men there and life-changing for me, quite frankly. We're learning on this journey. So those are the three things that you should know about right now. And
the work another retreat?
We will be. Probably it'll be in the fall.
Okay.
We're going to take the summer to really start working through some of our content, but in the fall, we'll be doing another one.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I've been.
Oh, and then if you want to find out about all that stuff, so all of that is tied together, go to the website, doinnerwork.com. www.doinnerwork.com.
And get on the mailing list.
Yeah, get on the mailing list.
Okay. Yeah, I've been looking for a podcast for my partner. He's super into health, but there's not like men that can talk about these things that you guys presented a really nice way. So he's downloaded a few. He's going to check them out.
That's great. Check it out. There's one that we did release on morning routine. So if you want to talk about health, a great way to start literally the day and to wake up with us is that one, the morning routine one. And then there's another one we haven't released yet with a guy named Paul Brunson and his interview. And he's an amazing guy. But most of that interview, probably 80% of it, talks about his morning routine. And so if you want to talk about health, like that's a great place to start.
I want to say this because you were saying that you're like still on your journey and you haven't been doing this that long. Like that is something that my partner is it's like when we're looking for mentors, we looking at somebody who's on the top of the mountain that we're just like one level up, it's way too hard to understand and see that we can actually like do it. Whereas where you are when you're starting out and you've done a lot of the work, like people are going to really be able to relate to you on a more personal, like not idle level to where they're like, oh, this guy's doing it. Like I can too. And so that's cool too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I feel like if we all have different purposes along the journey, I think we can both be participants and guides on the journey. Mm-hmm. And I feel very connected to keeping the feet on the ground and hitting it at the ground level. And there's a lot of other like great mentors and great teachers that can help pull from there. So I plan to stay in that space for a long time.
Thank you so much for this morning. This was great. A perfect way to start my day.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And thanks, you're welcome. You're welcome. Everybody. We will be talking to you later. Bye, Brian. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Goldmine Podcast. I ask that you share this out with anyone who might get value from this episode. And if you're looking for ways to support, please subscribe and review. And if you are not on the social media game yet, get on it. I am the only Shauna Sudik on Facebook, and on Instagram, my handle is shauna.kathleen. And I can't wait until next time.